From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Every 3 years, Idaho hospitals conduct an assessment to help determine our state's most urgent health needs. So in the past, issues like obesity, mental health, affordable housing, and even job availability have been the biggest concerns. But this year, some of those concerns have changed, though many seem to have stayed the same. So joining us today for an update on the latest results of the assessment, our program manager of the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative, Alexis Pickering, Regional Director of Community Health and Well-Being for St. Alphonsus, Rebecca Lemons, and Amy Stahl, Regional Marketing Director for Select Health with Intermountain Health. I want to welcome all three of you to the program.
Hello.
Hi, Gemma. Happy to be here.
So, Alexis, let me start the conversation with you, because let's begin with the fact that this year's community health needs assessment is different than in previous years. So how exactly has it changed?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Gemma. It is a lot different. And what's really exciting about this community health needs assessment is it's truly the first ever collaborative CHNA that's been completed across urban, suburban, and rural landscapes, and has never had this type of partnership in place. So as you mentioned, this is a really systematic and important data that we need to collect for healthcare and public health and community-based organizations. So we understand what the community needs are. And when we collaborate in this way, we tend to, and as in the case with this report, we have much better data.
So, Alexis, what's exactly unique about this new effort, would you say?
Yeah, so we've never collaborated in this way before. As, you know, health systems, these are two different public health districts that are collaborating for the first time. We've also had United Way and private and, you know, going to be nonprofit health systems collaborating. And we've never had it across these 10 counties. Typically, we've seen it maybe in Canyon and Ada County. But we've never had this many partners understanding and surveying these 10 counties, which actually is basically about half the state's population. So that's really what's different about this CHNA.
So Alexis, these 10 counties, what exactly did the assessment look at?
So the assessment really, I mean, through qualitative interviews and focus groups and surveys, we collected information about what are the greatest health needs that you're facing in your community? Tell us about the barriers or challenges that you're facing. What's also going well? What types of access to care is the highest need for you? What's your awareness of just the greatest needs that your community is facing? And then just, of course, demographic data, understanding each of our participants and their health needs, those types of questions.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, let me bring you into the conversation, because in the report, I'm curious about what you found were the biggest health priorities.
As a group, we did a lot of intentional listening. As Alexis said, we spent a lot of time collecting that community voice so that we were spending time looking not only at what the numerical data was telling us about issues that were impacting these 10 counties, but what the people were reflecting that their lived experience was and what was a big priority to them, not just what's showing up in the numbers. So the priorities that we saw this year, which will carry on for the next couple of years until we do this needs assessment again in 2026, the number one priority that we heard across each of the 10 counties, though they reflected slightly different in each area, was safe. A lot of attention, unsurprisingly, put on how people are being impacted by the changes in housing in our area. This was the same top priority that we saw in 2020 when we did our previous needs assessment. So this wasn't surprising, but there was some interesting new data that came up around why this is an issue. The other issues we had were behavioral health, which is including mental health issues and well-being, as well as substance misuse, a lot of discussion in that area. Again, that had also been reflected in previous needs assessments, but it wasn't in the top three previously. So that's really changed post-pandemic. And then the last one was access to affordable healthcare, including oral and vision health. And when we say access to healthcare, that's not just sticks and bricks. We need more clinics. That's a whole host of other reasons why people are really struggling to accessing healthcare. And again, that was reflected in previous reports, but it was ranked more like five or six versus here it was in the top three. We really heard from people that they are struggling to get access to really important health services that they are needing right now.
So, Rebecca, let's break down some of these priorities and let's begin with housing. Safe and affordable housing, as you said, was still that primary concern. So how exactly would housing instability potentially impact someone's health?
Housing instability is deeply connected to people's health and their ability to attain health care. I actually call it one of the cornerstone social determinants of health, or things that are impacting people's health. We know that if people don't have access to safe, stable housing, it increases their likelihood to use emergency services, which are costly to them and costly to the healthcare organizations. They are putting off the ability to access preventative healthcare or other treatments. People are not purchasing prescription medications that they might need because they're focused on their rent or their mortgage payments first. We also see a pretty dramatic increase in behavioral health and mental health issues, with increases in depression and anxiety for folks who are stressed, because it's really important for people to know where they're going to be sleeping at night with their family. So we see all of these things are really impacting people's health. And it's also really difficult for folks to manage chronic diseases or even spreadable communicable diseases that increase when people are not having stable living conditions. So we see housing as really tied to all of these other needs in some way, shape, or form.
Do we know, Rebecca, what the housing vacancy rate is for this region of Idaho with these 10 counties that participated in the assessment?
We do. It varies from month to month. The Idaho Realtors Association does a good job at putting out vacancy rates by county. But during the time that we did this report, we saw about a 4% vacancy rate in rental units, which is about the tipping point for a healthy community. You really need about more than 4% of a vacancy rate in rentals for people to be able to access them. The other thing that we heard a lot, especially in our rural counties or in some of our beautiful counties like Valley County, is that many of the rental units are being used for short-term rentals, for Airbnbs or vacation rentals, which is lovely for people coming in, but it takes up housing stock that could otherwise be available to folks living and working in those communities. So vacancy is a real challenge for us, especially in Ada, Canyon, and Payette counties. Those really flagged as counties having very limited rental vacancies.
And so, Alexis, if you don't mind me adding, Gemma, too. So when we, you know, the beauty of this assessment is we talk to, you know, folks in Ada, Canyon County, and, you know, Rebecca mentioned a few others. But I think truly, if you dive a little bit deeper into our report, we also highlight how, you know, housing is impacting folks all across those 10 counties. And we heard from folks in Marcy and Glens Ferry, and, you know, housing might look a little bit different there, but they're still facing those same hardships. And it's really not a, you know, urban versus rural type discussion. It truly is. Housing is impacting this entire region and everyone's feeling it in some form or fashion.
Well, and the same can probably be said, Alexis, for mental health, in the sense that Idaho has been suffering from a shortage of mental health providers. So in the report, what concerns were uncovered when it comes to mental health here in Idaho?
Yeah, I think really mental health is on everyone's minds, and folks really in the report through these interviews and focus groups and surveys, folks really talked about the impact that COVID, housing, cost of living, all of those pieces are having on that mental health, with a big focus on youth mental health. We didn't survey children in this report, but a lot of parents, adults, grandparents completed it, and they were talking about how just the levels of anxiety, the lack of ability to get care and treatment for their families or their kids. Those were the types of themes that we heard from folks, and just a lack of prevention, loneliness, disconnection, all those types of things are playing a role in this pervasive and high rate of mental instability.
And Amy, access to affordable healthcare was also a big concern within the assessment, especially for people who rely on Medicaid. So what about the tens of thousands of people here in our state that are losing their Medicaid insurance? I mean, we know that this has happened since April because Medicaid has been unwinding. So what about their access to healthcare? I would make the assumption that it would be more difficult.
That's a really good point. Thank you for pointing that out, Gemma. The Medicaid redetermination process is playing out as we speak in terms of the decline in people accessing Medicaid, the potential for issues with communication with them, their lack of awareness of the process that they need to connect with a primary care physician. So that's exacerbating an existing problem that we have as one of the country's leading shortages of primary care. So unfortunately, our state is ranked 50th in the number of primary care providers. Mm. And of course, they're foundational to healthcare in a broader context. The other thing to reiterate what Alexis and Rebecca mentioned is this report looks at urban and rural access mm-hmm. and issues facing people in this 10-county area. It's very diverse. And so it's important that we look at it holistically so that we can tackle these issues together to make improvements to improve the health of our communities.
So let's talk about the health rankings itself. Were there some counties that are doing better than others? And Amy, can you answer that?
I could. Alexis might be able to speak in more detail, but as you would imagine, the counties, the more heavily populated counties have a higher population mm-hmm. of providers. So access is somewhat better. And we have wonderful partners in FQHCs. That would be Terry Riley, Valley Health, which are providing services for people in lower income level. But we still have a shortage. And so the rankings can reflect that as well.
Mm-hmm. So Alexis, your thoughts on that and what the report found in terms of, you know, counties that may be doing better. And as Amy said, maybe it's just based on the fact that, you know, in your more urban areas, you're always going to have more access to you know, healthcare providers.
Yeah, and I think the county health rankings that we cited in our report, we get those from the Robert Wood Johnson county health rankings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have two different rankings that you can look at. And one of them is those health outcomes, and then the other is health factors. And so, you know, access to care is definitely a health factor, as, you know, Amy mentioned, and those more urban areas will have more resources in that way. But what's interesting about the county by county rankings is you'll see that despite maybe the types of resources that a community might have, their outcomes might be better, or it might be vice versa. And so I think there's some really interesting variances across the 10 counties. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that Ada County, it has the best health factors in place to support health outcomes. But Valley County takes the cake when it comes to health outcomes. And that could be due to socioeconomics, all sorts of different social determinants of health that impact that population. But I think what's really interesting is we want to look a little bit deeper into what are those commonalities across those 10 counties, and looking at Washington, Owyhee, or Payette, mm-hmm. who have some of the lowest health outcomes. And what are those health factors that we can pinpoint and target to improve those health outcomes?
Mm-hmm. Alexis, were there any outside factors that impacted folks' health concerns when you did this assessment?
And what do you mean by that, Gemma? Do you mean like actually participating in the survey or impacting their health?
Like impacting their health.
Yeah, I would say in the report and in the interviews that, I mean, I was a part of, people talked about low wages, the inability to get a good paying job, inability to find housing. There was, you know, lots of challenges with, you know, childcare, accessing childcare, mm-hmm. transportation, a lot of those basic needs that I think some people take for granted and assume that because we live in a bubble, maybe in Ada County, that's not an issue somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really those types of challenges to get to healthcare or to get to school or to get to your job. It's those types of things that are weighing heavily on people. But it looks like Rebecca might have something else to add.
I was just going to say, when we ask people specifically around their struggles with accessing healthcare or health-related services, there's a number of things that Alexis has mentioned. The cost of care, even with insurance, is a struggle. finding providers that take different kinds of insurance can be challenging. We heard a lot about a lack of dental care, particularly for our Medicaid and Medicare populations. The transportation issue is one that we work on at St. Alphonsus daily, especially to our rural communities. There may not be specialty providers or the availability of urgent care services in many of our communities. And we're just hearing more and more about long wait times. People are struggling to find a new physician, to get in to see them. And if you have something fairly urgent, it ends up getting put off many times because people are just having a hard time accessing these providers, getting to them, and then affording those services once they are there.
And I want to add on to Rebecca's point, too, is we also heard from folks, and we hosted several focus groups and interviews with folks that work with the Hispanic population or work with refugee or immigrant populations. And we heard really loudly and clearly that there's a lot of discrimination and bias, and not just in the healthcare sector, but across sectors. And that's also proving to be a really big barrier to accessing all different kinds of services or having trust in the system to be able to get the help that they need so that they can live, you know, healthy, vibrant lives. So it's there's a lot of various aspects to, you know, even getting into care that we looked into and we saw through this report.
So, Rebecca, now that you've wrapped up the assessment of what needs to be addressed, what have these partner organizations, one being St. Alphonsus, what are you doing now to try to help people and move the needle?
Great question. So I want to start by sharing kind of what we started with in 2020 when we did our last assessment, specifically around housing, where that was a thing, was one of the top priorities, and share sort of where we're looking to take some of that work. There were several examples in 2020 of our housing results where St. Alphonsus started looking at how to lean into being a meaningful partner in housing. We ended up participating in affordable housing projects in Boise with Caritas Commons, which was Boise's first land trust project, purchased the land that will stay perpetually affordable under 14 homes in West Boise. That project has now grown to cover three different developments across southwestern Idaho. We had a project in Nampa that was just adjacent to the Nampa St. Alphonsus Hospital on Garrity called the Canyon Terrace Apartments. Those apartments are for folks who make 80% or less of the area median income. So that means that they income qualify. But that project was special because while we were doing that assessment, we identified that students from the Nampa School District had the highest rates of homelessness. And so we were able to dedicate a number of units in that development to those students experiencing homelessness and their families. And then we also did a project in Ontario just over that border called Riverbend Place. That was a unique blend of 10 different community providers who come on site to provide spaces like telemedicine, telecounseling, dental services at the housing location for the residents and the community at large. I'm excited to say that with the 2023 needs assessment, we are already teeing up projects in partnership with St. Luke's, Intermountain, and many others to do new housing projects in Boise and Nampa. An additional project that all three of our organizations today with Central District Health, Intermountain, and St. Alphonsus are all partnering on is a new initiative called Build Payette. We actually secured a Build Health Challenge grant. This is the fourth round of them. It's a significant $600,000 grant over the next 3 years that we will be collaboratively working on in the city of Payette. It will focus around housing as one component, but we hope to do quite a bit of community engagement and community building to help us not just co-design the housing, but also create a community center. And we want to do deep listening in that community to identify what services, speaking of barriers to healthcare and transportation, what services could we bring to that central community location and how could we offer them differently or in ways that would be more approachable to get the residents to participate. So we're super excited about that opportunity. And then finally, to continue to address the access to care and the great comments that Alexis made about some of our non-white, our Hispanic, Latino, and our migrant farm working and our new American communities have reflected, St. Alphonsus has launched a mobile health clinic over the last year that's focusing in Canyon County, but expanding over toward the Oregon clinic for folks who are uninsured, undermixed. Instead, we go to them at community locations like libraries or the Salvation Army or other spaces so that we can remove those barriers of cost and transportation. And we also bring in community health workers and other folks that are of and from those communities to help build the relationships and trust with the folks there. So all of these initiatives have really been spurned on by the amazing community involvement that we've had from these needs assessments.
This is Amy Stahl. I'd like to mention that the BUILD grant is particularly thrilling to be working in PAYET in partnership with YCAP, the Western Idaho Community Action Plan and Program. And it's on the ground. It's providing incredible services in PAYET, and we're joining together to lift them up. So we are really thrilled to be part of that collaborative.
So, Amy, I was just going to ask you, so I know Select Health has also had efforts since the assessment, but in your opinion, has this collaboration been working well?
It has. We communicate frequently. The CHNA provides the umbrella under the leadership of Alexis and the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative that we can work together and communicate. The BUILD grant, as I mentioned, was a perfect example. During the application process, we had to commit to participate, commit funding, and then when we received it, we're all delivering on it. We've had other programs where we're working collaboratively with organizations like LEAP, the Idaho Housing and Finance Association, and we rarely do that in a bubble. It's always working together to find out where all the investments are, but this provides the framework to allow us to be more targeted and make a bigger impact in the community.
Well, and Amy, I would be remiss, go ahead.
If I may, I would be remiss to mention, if we didn't mention our collaborators at St. Luke's as well. I know we haven't mentioned them yet, but I think this is an exciting opportunity where we've had the two public health departments locally, St. Luke's, St. Alphonsus, Intermountain, Select Health, Weezer Memorial, and a number of those community partners really working collaboratively. And we are just all thrilled and proud to be able to collectively address these issues because none of our organizations could be doing any of this individually.
Well, I'm so glad you pointed that out because I think sometimes there's an idea that our healthcare systems don't work together. And when every 3 years, when this assessment comes out, you realize how closely actually these healthcare organizations do actually put their heads together and work together for the better of our community.
That is true. And Rebecca, thank you for that reference to St. Luke's. As an example, Select Health has a grant program that we provide resources to school districts, nonprofits, counties. And I collaborate when we were making a decision on which ones to award. I reached out to the other organizations to validate the work, the data, and just see what else is going on. But as I say, this project will allow us to put more resources together into things to make a bigger impact.
Well, and Alexis, I would think too that when you are seeing this collaboration, right, and as both Amy and Rebecca talked about what they're doing within this collaboration and that they're individual organizations, you're not just kind of taking things out of thin air and trying to, you know, throw them and see what sticks. I mean, you've literally have this assessment, you have this report from real people within our state, and then you can take that data and make a difference. I mean, what does that feel like at the end of every 3 years when you can see some results?
I mean, you just said it so well, Gemma. I think that, you know, really before, and I have to give also props to all those partners that Rebecca and Amy mentioned, all of those partners and United Way as well, pay for basically me to collaborate and organize this group of like-minded organizations to address community health. So without that leadership, you know, we wouldn't have been able to structure and organize and do this CHNA. And now we have, to your point, you know, the first ever shared metric system that all of us now are looking at because it's the same population. We had the same process, right? Where we collected that data, And so now what's really even more exciting is we're going to be developing, we're currently developing the first ever regional health improvement plan. So all of our collaborative partners, which is 23 members, and our funders that keep this collaboration afloat, we're all going to be working in alignment for the first time to address these three health priorities over the course of the next 3 years. And then what's great is, when we do this CHNA in 3 years from now, we'll be able to track that progress over time and see how we're doing. How can we be better? What did work well? And that really is the benefit, not only to our organizations and our strategies and priorities, but ultimately the whole population itself.
And so, Alexis, is that really the next step in the process then?
It is. Yep. We're currently working on that right now, and we're going to have this plan by November of this year. And we're really excited to share that out once that's completed.
And Alexis, were there any other significant outcomes from the report that stuck out to you or to the other, your other collaborators?
I think generally speaking, when we talk about any of these health needs in isolation, we tend to just kind of focus on, you know, one population or one health issue. And really what we found in the data is that our neighbors, our friends, our families really understand how intersectional and intersected these health needs are. And I think generally, you know, at the legislature or in boardrooms, we tend to just think of these health needs in silos. And I think really what we want to impart on folks is, you know, all of these health needs all work in tandem or all coinciding with each other. And if we really want to address them head on, we got to think upstream. We've got to understand that regional impact of what's being done in Payette, right? Hopefully can have a ripple effect maybe in Garden City or in New Meadows, right? And so I think having that approach is going to be really key. And we heard from folks across the 10 counties that they're expecting us to understand that intersection and address it in a meaningful way.
Before I let the three of you go, I'd like to ask each of you the same question. And that is, in your opinion, what was the most striking thing that you found in this report? And Amy, I'll start with you.
I think the housing issue is, you know, it's very well known, the increase in costs, the challenges facing the homeless population. I was really intrigued by the level of concern for specific populations as it pertained to mental health issues. Really a lot of concern about youth, suicide prevention, veterans. And we really need to lean into that to make a difference, particularly as Alexis referenced youth. There haven't been a lot of resources dedicated to that, and there are a lot of efforts underway to address that and expand the availability of services.
And Rebecca, same question for you. What was the most striking part of this report?
I think just getting to sit in community and listen to people's individual stories. I find that humbling and touching every time to really understand the story and the people behind the numbers that we are seeing and hearing. The other thing that really struck me is, while my job and our jobs here collectively are to look at these big sticky issues collaboratively and how do we address housing or behavioral health, there's a lot of folks who still just on an individual level aren't aware of the resources that are available in our communities. And so I would say, if anybody listening is thinking about, well, I have a neighbor who's struggling and needs rent assistance, or I know somebody who has food security issues, there is a resource we have now in Idaho called findhelpidaho.org. We reference it in the report, but it's a really great repository of all the amazing partners and programs and resources that are available at free cost or low cost to individuals, if for some reason some of these things are ringing true for people on a more individual level. So we really hope, in addition to addressing these big issues, to make our community more aware of the services and resources that may be available to them that they don't currently know about.
And Alexis, let me wrap up with you. What struck you about this report?
I mean, I would echo what Amy and Rebecca said, but what I think is really fantastic as well that we haven't shared is this report, I mean, usually when we do these reports, as you know, they're massive. It's, you know, mm-hmm. 114 pages. And oftentimes we want this data really to go back into the community itself so that they know what those findings are. We want it to inform decisions and priorities. And sometimes this type of report just isn't the right medium to do that and have those conversations. So I'm really excited and proud that we were able to create the first ever Idaho Oregon Community Health Atlas, since that's a, you know, aggregated, free public online tool that's so easy to use. And it has all of the CHNA data in there for the 10 counties plus additional communities, two counties in Oregon and more in Magic Valley in the Wood River Valley. And really it's there that folks like, you know, your neighbor, policymakers, you know, CEOs, that type of thing, you can play around with that atlas. You can look at things at a zip code level or census tract level if the data is available for that. And you can pull all of the indicators, layer, do some really great analytics. And I think it's through those tools that I really hope folks will use it, inform their decisions, and drive that change and truly then understand how all these health needs are being, you know, impacting our residents at some point in time.
I want to thank all three of you for taking time today to talk with us about this and to give us a greater understanding as a community, as well as what these needs are. So thank you to all three of you. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you. Thanks, Gemma.
We've been talking with Program Manager of the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative, Alexis Pickering, Regional Director of Community Health and Well-Being for St. Alphonsus, Rebecca Lemons, and Amy Stahl, Regional Marketing Director for Select Health with Intermountain Health. We've been discussing Idaho's most urgent health needs. We'll have more Idaho Matters next.